All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This is John Reed of the 30-something movie podcast, and I don't know where I am. I'm holding up a newspaper that you probably can't see with today's date on it. Dee and Jason are holding me hostage, so if you're listening to this, never mind. Just remember me as I was and listen to this awesome episode of the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. Check.
I think you're a little bit quiet, D.
Can you take me higher?
Nice. Hello, my friends. We meet again. It's been a while. Where should we begin? Welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. This week, D, we are talking about Creed and are they worth the hate? If you didn't listen to our Nickelback episode, go back. We dropped that last week. That was a lot of fun. These bands are kind of similar in hate that they received, especially from the internet early on in the 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, literally, they were ranked number one and number two of most hated bands by Rolling Stone. So let's go there. Let's make our escape. Come on, let's go there. Okay, well, so before we get going, we're not covering a particular album, right? These guys, they basically had three albums. We're going to grab their best songs off of those albums and talk about each one of those. And then they broke up, then they got back together, and they had another album, and then they broke up again, and now they're back together again doing a tour right now. You sent me a text. Like, they're going to be up the road 15 miles in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I was like, $40? $40 freaking and we can go watch Creed?
So actually, here's the funny part. Yeah. I was like, you know what? I wonder what Nickelback is doing on tour. Uh-huh. So I Googled Nickelback tour dates. Well, they're not on tour right now.
Oh, okay.
I mean, who knows? Maybe next week they're in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, they got back together last year, 2023, and have been touring all of 2024. Now, obviously, there's some conflict in the band that has resulted in these breakups and get-backs togethers and all of those things. And I think that comes into play when we start talking about the reason that people hate Creed when they do hate Creed. But we'll dive into that in a second. Before we get there, let me ask you, did you have Nickelback albums back in like the late 90s, early 2000s?
I did not own any Nickelback albums.
Did you own Creed albums at that time?
So I didn't buy a Creed album, but this is, the days when you could burn a CD, like use your computer to burn a CD.
Yeah.
And I had my buddy at work burn the gold CD.
Yeah.
And then I used a color printer to print off the cover of Human Clay.
A color printer from 1999.
That was like,
you had a dot matrix printer.
Yeah. And like you got it out of the printer. It was wet. Right? And you cut it out. So I did have a copy of Human Clay, but I didn't buy it.
I got to tell you, looking at these album covers, I doubt that your dot matrix cover was much worse than the covers that we got if we bought the CD.
Their album covers are not strong.
They're terrible. I mean, I was looking at this and I'm like, Human Clay, you got this weird monster coming out of the water that looks like a snapshot from Lawnmower Man. I mean, it's terrible.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because I was just getting ready to say, it looks like the T-1000 as he's like changing from metal to human.
No, I feel like this is like James Cameron's drawing of the T-1000 with like pencil and colored pencils. It's terrible.
So did you own any Creed CDs?
I did, actually. And I did not steal them from some other person. I used my BMI catalog and I picked them up for a penny each. I got to tell you, I loved them. I had Human Clay. I had Weathered. I listened to both of them routinely. I loved them.
I love them too, man. There's no denying that their songs are really good.
They had some great songs. Now, other people didn't feel that way. And this was a time in history that was very special and unique. This band is one of the best-selling bands of all time. I'm not talking late 90s, early 2000s. I'm saying of all time, if you compare all bands, these guys have so many million albums sold that they are in the top tier.
That's really interesting. You know, we talked last week on our Nickelback episode that these guys are kind of the last of the real CD movers because everything else was going Napster or streaming or whatever downloadable stuff you could do on your computer. These are kind of the last of the people who really sold CDs.
Last of the rock bands for sure.
Right.
Last of the rock band. I mean, you've got a few stragglers, a handful at best, maybe five, probably not even that, who are movers in the 21st century. But once you move past Y2K, there are virtually no bands that are big sellers. It became all individual artists.
And these guys are among the last, and that's, I think, part of the reason why there's some jealousy maybe involved in that.
Absolutely. I mean, the very straightforward phrase that they got when they were turned down is, rock and roll is dead. Now, how many of you folks would love to have a rock and roll band back around with all of this Taylor Swift and Drake and all of these other guys who are just printing music on a computer?
Me.
Yeah.
Me, right?
Bring me somebody who plays their own drum set and plays their own guitar and writes their own lyrics and sings them without auto-tune.
All right, we ready to dive into
Creed? Let's go. Here? Let's pick the first song. We know that the first album that they had, they put together themselves for like $6,000 is what I've
That's
heard.
Right.
Which is a pretty, like they were paying their producer $30 an hour and they recorded at his house. It wasn't even at a studio.
I
they
know,
recorded
I love it.
At his house. They are not signed by a label. They're just like, hey, can we put this record together? They've got some help from their new manager who basically owned the bar that they were playing in. And that's how this first album gets made. What is our song number one?
Before I give you song number one, I just want to give a quick shout out to our buddy James Buckley, who helped me kind of get our list organized for Nickelback and Creed.
Yeah. Thanks, James. James is all in to the Nickelback and Creed comparison. All in on whether they're worth the hate or not.
That's because he knows what's up, man.
He knows good rock music when he hears it.
All right, let's start off with their debut single. That song is called My Own Prison.
Quarters in session, a verdict is in. No appeal on the docket today, just my own sin.
It's a great song.
It's a great song.
I mean, it's funny to me that the reason that we heard that everybody hated Nickelback was because that their lyrics were vacuous, which I said, hey, when's the last time you used that word in a sentence? Guess what? You're picking up on what people are saying on the internet if you're using that word to describe them,
right?
Don't be a follower. Think for yourself. But then you compare that to Creed, and hey, we've got some lyrics that actually have some significant meaning behind them. And they're hated because their lyrics have meaning.
So I held my head up high, I didn't hate that burns inside. So it feels their selfish pride. I'll captive out from the songs.
What? Like, what? It doesn't even make sense.
So I heard their drummer, Scott Phillips, talking about this, and he said, that's what really sets Scott Stapp apart.
Yeah.
The fact that not only they're writing these great songs, which typically it was Scott Stapp lyrics, Mark Tremonti writing the music, he said, I really enjoyed how there was depth, there was substance behind the words. Now, on this particular song, D, there are some strong religious imagery going on here.
Yeah. So we talked before we started talking on the podcast about the personalities in this band. And I mean, basically, you really do just have two guys who are this band and then a bass player and a drummer. Not that Brian Marshall or Scott Phillips are bad musicians. They're just not the guys making the music.
That's
right. They're the guys that are playing the music. So you've got Scott Stapp and you've got Mark Tremonti. Scott, as you said, his personality is kind of like a roller coaster. You're going up or you're going down, and it's big highs and deep lows. And Mark is more basically level-headed, and that's probably the reason they ran into conflict. But we got to ask the question, because I think a lot of the hate that the band gets is because of the hate that Scott Stapp gets, right?
That's right.
And so, just to give a little history for him, right? 3-4 years old, watching TV with his family, and his dad, his biological dad, gets up, walks out of the room, and doesn't come back. That's a big hit.
That's huge. Yeah, that's huge.
And so, for a few years, his mother is trying to get by to feed this family on food stamps, and she meets a man at her church who is a dentist who is doing well, making money, and they get married. But this dentist, Mr. Stapp, who ultimately adopts Scott, is...
Dr. Stapp.
Thank you. Dr. Stapp.
He didn't go to 8 years of dental school for you to call him Mr. Stapp.
He says he is a guy who is very religious. And when Scott goes astray, his punishment, in addition to getting beaten, is that he has to rewrite Proverbs. And not only that, but has to analyze them and say, what does this mean? Apparently, every Monday, he would just get beaten because of what he might have done over the week that Dr. Stapp didn't know about. Like, that was it. It was this kind of idea, like, I know that you've done something. I don't know what it is, but I just got to beat you every Monday. And that was his life. And that's a pretty rough road to hoe, right? But I think that this punishment, as atrocious as it sounds, has to be a huge influence on how he writes. Because his life is the life of the church. Like, he doesn't have the influences of going out and partying with his friends. He doesn't have the influences of deep relationships at school because he's an outsider because of this weird religious stuff that he's got going on. So all that he has week after week after week is God, church, and scripture. And that's how this stuff gets woven into these lyrics. And this song here is a prime example of that. And I have the audacity to write about God. Let's hate on me for that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of Ed Roland from Collective Soul. We talked about how when you're raised in that environment, it's who you are. It's your verbiage. It's your dictionary. It's how you speak. It's how you learn. It's how you talk. And so lyrics like, see a vision of a cross. I feel the pain that was given on that sad day of loss. The lion roars in the darkness. Only he holds the key. A lot of cross imagery, a lot of Jesus imagery. The lion, you know, the Lion of Judah,
yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So that stuff just comes out of him on a deeper level. It's a spiritual thing within him, but it was really tipped in the extreme, right? He had a 10 o'clock curfew. He talked about how his first record that he bought was Pyromania because he liked the song Photograph. You talk about benign rock and roll. Def Leppard is about as benign as you can get.
Oh, on Pyromania, maybe, not Hysteria.
Okay. I mean,
what are love bites?
But yeah, they did not spare the rod on their son. Mm-mm. And it came out in his lyrics.
He ran away from home when he was 17 years old because of the situation that he was in. And then he thinks, okay, I will, you know, because his adoptive dad says, you're cut off. I'm not going to help you if you're going to run away and not live under my rules. And so his way to make amends is he goes to a religious college. He goes to Lee College.
Right.
Which they have more strict rules than your standard university. And he does something that I can say that probably 75% of the university goers that I went to school with did, which is he got high. He smoked pot with his friends. Unlike the rest of the people that I know, he got caught at this religious school.
Somebody snitched on him.
Yeah, somebody snitched on him. And so he had been taught honesty is the best policy. I'm going to be honest and they will forgive me. And he was honest and they said, get out. They expelled him. They didn't give him any kind of grace whatsoever. And so he now is without any money, without any place to stay. I mean, he's in a dorm room. He can't stay there anymore. He slept in his TA's closet for a while until they caught him doing that and had the police escort him out.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not, it's not a good representation of what Christianity should be for
somebody.
That's
right. Well, let me offer a little bit of grace. He calls his grandparents, and his grandparents say, yeah, but we'll rent you an apartment.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't have any furniture.
He or said electricity.
He slept on a bed of towels.
Yeah.
That was his bed.
Yeah.
In the depths of that, he started writing poetry, which then we know now were lyrics.
Yep.
By the way, My Own Prison peaked at number one on the Billboard rock charts and number one on the modern rock charts. He woke up from a dream, wrote everything down, finished the song in about 30 minutes, and it's about him accepting responsibility for his bad decisions that put him in his own prison. I cry out to God, seeking only his decision. He will stand and confirm I create my own prison.
Okay, let's go with song number two.
Song number two that I want to talk about is a song called Torn. This one is actually written by Mark Tremonti, who wrote the lyrics and the music.
Yeah, normally he's just the music. So Mark Tremonti, he had actually been born, I believe he's in Detroit.
That's right.
And grew up in Detroit for the first part of his life, was listening to Metallica and...
He was a metal guy.
Anthrax and, you know, those the hard rocking bands. Then his father moved down to Florida, where... You know, ultimately, he went to high school with Scott Stapp, and he said down there, people were listening to pop music, you know?
Milli Vanilli is what he mentioned.
Yeah, that one specifically, yes.
Another band that we covered on Are They Worth the Hate?
Right. Go back and check that episode out. It's one of my favorites. But they, I guess they knew of each other in high school, but they weren't friends. They were hanging out in different circles. So ultimately, after Scott has this apartment rented by his grandparents, he ultimately gets jobs, starts making some money, gets a girlfriend, and the girlfriend introduces him to some new music. She introduces him to Led Zeppelin and The Doors.
Mm-hmm.
And he absolutely falls in love with The Doors. And I got to say this, there's been a lot of comparison, like it is a well-known comparison that they are the great value version of Pearl Jam, right? Like everybody says he just sings like Eddie Vedder, which I don't know that he sounds any more like Eddie Vedder than Scott Weiland or Layne Staley.
Right.
I just don't get it. But if you throw back further and look at The Doors, he also sounds like Jim Morrison.
He does sound like Jim Morrison.
And ultimately, later on, once he hit fame, he actually got to go with the surviving members of The Doors and sing with them. I can't imagine
that was
how
so cool.
Awesome. Because you listen to him sing those Doors songs and you're like, dang, that dude is spot on.
The members of The Doors were like, it was like Jim Morrison was on stage with us again.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this world we're born. Into this world we're thrown. Like a dog without a bone. And knocked around alone. Riders on the storm. There's a killer on the road. His brain is
squirrel. He really hits, but that's his vocal style. And just because it happens to be similar to Eddie Vedder's, it's tragic that people have to make a deal out of that.
One thing I will say, Scott Stapp is very charismatic. He's very gifted as a singer. He's a great front man. But the lyrics to this song, because they were written by Mark Tremonti, I thought this was interesting. He came home, he was like working as a cook at Chili's.
Yeah.
Right? So these guys are about our age.
Right.
He comes home, he's at an apartment. He wants to be a musician. His life is not going the way he wants it to. He smells like
Chili's.
Chicken tenders.
Baby back, baby back.
Right? He said he was smelly, gross, lost, and he wrote this song.
So after Scott finds this girlfriend, he gets into The Doors, he reads that at some point Jim Morrison lived in Tallahassee.
Right.
So he decides that's going to be the key to my success. And so he ups and moves to Tallahassee. And as it turns out, That's where Mark had moved to as well. They were both working in the food court at the local mall, and they see, you know, recognize each other and ultimately get together, and ultimately it worked.
It worked to the tune of millions of records.
Ultimately.
And a date in Oklahoma City next week.
Right. Well, they hit it off so well. They felt like that vibe that they both decided this is what we've got to do. We have got to put a band together. So they go and they recruit Brian Marshall to play the bass. And they recruit Scott Phillips to play the drums. And they finagle deal with a local club called Floyd's to be the house band. According to the internets, it was, we guarantee you 200 people a night.
Right.
Scott, you know, when they do the, is Wikipedia right? Scott Stapp's like, I don't remember guaranteeing 200 people a night, but yes, it's true that we did play as the house band for Floyd's. But all that they were doing was playing cover songs, which is what you do as a beginning band most of the time. But they had a couple of originals that they had put together. And so one night as they're playing at Floyd's, the bartender hears them play these original songs. He calls up the club owner, Jeff Hansen,
yep,
and says, I need you to come over here. And Jeff is, I mean, this is, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. And Jeff Hansen's like, what's wrong? Why do I come? He's like, this band is playing some songs and I really think you need to hear it. And he's like, okay, okay. And he gets up and he goes over to listen to who at the time, I believe they were called Naked Toddler. Maybe there was a handful of names.
Naked Toddlers. That's right.
Yeah. And he goes and listens and he's like, these guys are going to be famous. And he sells his interest in restaurants so that he can fund creating an album with, at the time, Naked Toddler.
Right.
What ultimately would become Creed.
Mark Tremonti was talking about how one of the things that really led him to believe that Scott Stapp was the guy. Scott Stapp was going to be the guy that carried us as the quarterback for this thing because they had been jamming with their buddies or whatever. As a matter of fact, they were jamming on Living Color.
Nice.
I got to think it's Cult of Personality.
Oh, yeah.
So Mark had a buddy who was playing on the drums, and one day he comes in, it's 15 minutes late, and Scott's like, you don't have it. You don't have the heart. You don't have the decency to be here on time. You're out. And Mark's like, that guy's my friend. What are you talking about, you know?
Right.
But ultimately, he sort of bowed to that intensity and said, well, this is how we're going to go. This is the way we're going to do it.
I can say that we have not yet covered a band that didn't have at least one member of the band who is like that. There isn't a band that we've covered where all of the members are like, yeah, you know, whatever.
Right.
No.
No, you got to have somebody.
I mean, yes. There is always a member that says, this is it. This is how we're going to make it, and nothing else is going to get in our way.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you're not in, you're out.
Ready for the next song?
Yeah, let's do it.
Next song is called What's This Life For?
Hooray for a child that makes it through, if there's any way, because...
Okay, so this one, I got to address the elephant in the room that I've already touched on a little bit, and that's the idea that this is a Christian band.
Okay.
Because he's writing music based upon how he grew up, right, and his own struggles. And I got to say, this was one of my favorite songs because I'm these guys' age. Like, these guys were all born in the early to mid-70s, which is when I was born. And so he's going through the same struggles that I am, looking for meaning and that sort of thing. And so because of his religious upbringing, and I can tell you it was a lot more religious than mine, he's asking the same questions that I was asking. But on their debut album, part of the chorus of this song is, but they ain't here no more, don't have to settle no GD score. I can tell you there are no quote-unquote Christian bands that have God D-A-M-N in their lyrics.
They're not going to play that at worship time on Sunday morning. This is the third single off My Own Prison. This actually reached number one on the mainstream rock charts. Stayed there for 6 weeks.
What's this life? What's this life?
This is a great song, man. So far, all of these songs are just bullseyes for me. Have you seen the video for this?
Which one is this?
This is the one they shot in Joshua Tree National Park.
Okay.
In California.
Yep.
And the director is like, I want it to be like Creed is playing so passionately that it changes the weather. So at first, the video is like, you know, desert settings, and then rain blows in and it's a massive rainstorm.
Okay.
So this is the same guy who directed the Hire video, and then I don't know if you remember Five for Fighting, the Superman It's Not Easy song.
Yeah.
He directed that video as well.
Okay.
I love that song as well. This was featured in the movie Halloween H2O. You remember that?
Well, yeah, because it just came out like what, 5 years ago.
No, from 98.
Oh, this I'm was thinking of something else.
Well, so this was Jamie Lee Curtis's first return as Laurie.
That's the one that I was thinking of. I guess I just am old and time has gone by. 5 years ago means actually 25 years ago.
Right, exactly. Oh, that was 5 years ago, wasn't it? We talked a little bit about it, but as they were building this demo, because all these songs were initially on a demo, it's kind of like the Collective Soul story, right?
Right.
But they would piece it together. You know, each week, one guy was responsible for kicking in $100
yeah.
to make their demo. And they would pay their producer, Jeff Kurtzman, a little bit at a time just to kind of build this on his own free time.
Like $30 an hour.
I remember one song in particular, Scott said he looked around and he was in a room with bunk beds and there was toys on the floor.
Yeah.
You know? But Scott tried a get-rich-quick scheme.
Yeah.
He got involved in some pyramid scheme. Yeah. He's going to like, hey, I'm going to double the band's money here real fast.
Uh-huh. This one, he's got the reputation for being a bit of a douchebag. Hey, I understand if you want to make an investment on behalf of the band. But if you're going to do that, you talk to the band
no
about
doubt.
It. You don't just go, hey, guys, surprise.
Bad news, everybody. I lost all of our money.
Like $3,000. And so Jeff Hansen has to go ask for a loan from a buddy just to finish this album.
That's right. Jeff Hansen is the guy who talked the radio station into playing My Own Prison for the first time. He did what a manager does, right? I mean,
but for Jeff Hansen, we would not have Creed. He was there to sign them. He was there to promote them. He was there to save them when Scott lost all of their money. And he was the guy who was out there pushing their product to get them played on the radio. And the DJ who he gave it to, I saw the interview. The DJ said it was unlike anything I've ever seen. The song wasn't even over. And we had calls pouring in asking about this.
It's a great song, man.
Yeah.
By the way, this song is written about Mark Tremonti's childhood friend who committed suicide.
Oh, that's tragic.
Okay. Next song on the album is called One.
Okay, number one, I love this song. Number two, the song is not politically correct.
Okay.
Take from one, give to another, society blind by color, why hold down one to raise another? I think that this song is a reaction to affirmative action. Could be wrong about that. I think that what he says is that we should be unified and we should be colorblind.
Yes.
And I think that what he's saying is the actions that have been put into play, largely in the late 90s, are not a unifying action, but a separating action.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Here's what I do know. This was the fourth single released off of My Own Prison and reached number two on the mainstream rock chart. This was a song that Scott Stapp sang while in the room with bunk beds and toys on the floor.
Right. Right. So it's important to know that their original production is not the one that had all of these big hits and big sellers, right? They had this album that they had produced themselves, and they sold all of those copies that they had.
Right.
6,000 copies, and they sold them all. So good. He made his money back.
Sure. You know?
But ultimately, they had to get signed by a record label before they were going to hit the charts like they were hitting. And so as it turns out, one of their shows, a lady named Diana Meltzer goes to the show, and she's like, these guys are freaking awesome. And her husband was a guy who had started up a company called Wind Up Records. His name was Alan Meltz, and his wife sees the show, and she's like, these are the guys that you need to sign. So literally, this is a brand new record label that doesn't have any indication of success at all. And I had heard several times that there were, you know, 14 record labels that had passed on Creed, but ultimately this one signed it because they're a little no-name brand new record label.
Right.
Mark said, no, that's not true. He was like, we had a couple of record labels that said no, but it was not, it was a pretty quick turnaround. So Alan agrees with his wife. They say, we want you to sign with Wind Up Records. And so the boys, being, you know, young 20 something guys, are like, this is it. We've made it. We've been signed by a record label. And so Scott Stapp says, we are going to sign it in blood.
Right.
And so he, like, he gets this rusty whatever to cut his hand and sign in blood. And he convinces Brian and Scott to sign in blood. And Mark is like, I'm not going to let you cut my hand. That is ridiculous. And so they send the record contract over and they're like, it's signed in red. That voids the contract. You're going to have to re-sign this. And so, yeah, they had signed it in their blood and then had to re-sign it because it was a void contract.
That's hilarious. I've got a quick funny story for you. Did you hear the lollipop story?
I have not. You told me, don't let me forget the lollipop story. And I'm like, I'm not going to explore that. I'm going to let myself be surprised.
Okay. So I heard him being interviewed and a guy said, hey, has anybody ever thrown anything at you on stage? Have you been hit with anything? He's like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. This is Scott Stapp talking. Scott Stapp said one of the worst ones was somebody threw a lollipop from the upper deck. And he said his drummer could see it coming. And Scott's like, listen, I'm very active on stage. I move around, I shake, I bop my head, I bang my head, I move, and I'm here, I'm there. He goes, to hit me, you've really got to be good, because I move around a lot. And this lollipop was just going, and he said it hit him right in the temple.
Uh-huh.
And he said it, he saw stars. And it was like, I mean, it nearly KO'd him. Freaking lollipop from the upper deck. All right, we ready to go on to the next song?
So we need a new album.
That's right.
This was their debut album. So then the question is, can they come out with something good for their sophomore offering?
Can they go higher? Come on. That was too easy. This song is called Higher. This is one of the truly last great songs of the 90s.
It really is a great song. And I love this song. I would listen to this song over and over off of this album. Have you seen the video?
Yeah, I've seen the video.
So I think this is another chink in the weight scale towards Scott Stapp's douchebaggery.
Okay.
I mean, the video starts off with them back in the dressing room, and it's this very polished video, and he's in his pleather pants and his white wife beater that's way too tight.
Slow motion walking. Yeah,
slow motion as they walk, you know, ignoring all of the incredibly gorgeous girls who are fawning over them. You think about what grunge did of, like, bringing reality back to music after the leather pants of the hair metal of the 80s. It's like we've come full circle, and these post-grunge guys are now in the leather pants again, and it's just douchey.
So I did hear Scott say that he's embarrassed when he goes back and watches this video.
Very well deserved embarrassment. Yeah.
This song is a banger. I have a personal story about this. I was at a very important football game. OU went on to win the national championship, and they had this real hard run in October.
Yeah.
We showed up at the football stadium at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and this was thumping from the speakers first thing, 7 a.m., and I was like, this is going to be a great day, man.
Perfect song to follow that journey. Yeah. Absolutely.
Red October. This song reached number 7 on the Hot 100. This is from July 22nd, 2000.
Okay.
Higher hits number 7, peaks out number 7. Yeah. Number 6, Absolutely by 9 Days.
Crickets, don't know who that is.
Number 5, I Wanna Know by Joe.
That sounds familiar.
Number 4, It's Gonna Be Me by NSYNC.
Well, okay, yeah, NSYNC was still riding the wave, I guess.
Number 3, Try Again by Aaliyah.
Nope.
Number 2, Everything You Want by Vertical Horizon. That's a good song.
Okay.
And number 1, Bent by Matchbox 20.
Okay, that was a decent song.
There's a few familiar faces there.
Yeah, so sad. The end of rock and roll.
The genesis of this song is pretty interesting because they would challenge themselves live to see if they could improvise a song on stage, and they would start with the drums, and then the guitars would come in, and then Scott was kind of expected to sing something, and they would go back and they would watch video footage of their concerts, and they would say, okay, that's a good idea. Let's further that one. Okay, no, cross that one out. Uh-huh. But this is one of those where like, well, this is really good. We need to flesh this one out into a full-blown song.
Right. Yeah. So that's Mark's story of how this song came to be.
Okay.
Here's Scott's story of how this song. Scott was having dreams about being chased by a gunman, hiding under a bridge, chased by a gunman. It was nightmares that were freaking. It was a recurring dream, like he couldn't get rid of it. And so he started studying lucid dreaming, like techniques to, if you don't know what lucid dreaming is, control your dream as you're dreaming. And so once he had studied those techniques, he put them into play, and he was able to escape the gunman and feel safe. From that time on, he didn't have those dreams anymore. And that's what inspired him to write the lyrics to this song.
By the way, side note, Streets of Gold, that is a biblical reference.
Uh-huh.
Revelation 21:21. And then A Place Where Blind Men See.
Yeah.
Gotta be Matthew 20:30-33, where Jesus makes a blind man see.
Yeah.
Biblical imagery, again, coming out in the song.
Yeah.
The interesting thing that I find about this, so Scott has all these personal problems, which we'll get into here in a second, but the band is finally now paying attention to the lyrics because they're being labeled as a Christian band. And they're like, what's going on here, Scott? This was not our dream, to be a Christian band.
Right.
Scott's like, well, I'm just writing what I'm writing, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's no way Scott could have been surprised by what people were saying of them being a Christian band with as much influence.
Scott's not surprised.
The rest of the guys, because they are getting labeled as a Christian band. But, I mean, you can't call the band Creed and refer to God and religious themes in basically all of your huge hits and not know that some people are going to call you a Christian band. But they literally put out a statement. Hey, we are not a Christian band. You know, we have our own beliefs and we write about those beliefs, but we do not have an agenda. A Christian band has an agenda to convert. We do not have that. But yeah, they came out and said very specifically, we're not a Christian band.
I heard him say that basically they were accepted by the Christian music community and by the secular community. And that's part of the reason why they sold so many records.
Yeah.
I hate to leave this one so early, but we got to press on.
Yeah.
Great song. Next song we're going to talk about is a song called What If? Bob in my head, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, I heard this one again for the first time this morning. This was a great song to work out to.
Sure.
Totally brought on the Dead and Bloated vibes from STP.
I agree.
Mean, the growly scream that comes in when he starts singing seems very much...
I think that's fair.
I am standing like a rose that somebody gave me on my birthday deathbed.
No doubt about it.
Still kills it. Yeah.
This was the second single released January 31st, 2000. Mm-hmm. That beginning part sounds exactly like Paint It Black from the Rolling Stones.
Oh, yeah. Very similar.
Have you seen the music video? This song appears on the Scream 3 soundtrack.
Widely regarded as the best of the... Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. Worst of the Scream movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a bad Scream movie, but...
Number three.
The video is really cool. So I watched it. It's so 90s. You really need to go back and watch it.
Uh-huh.
It starts off with David Arquette, who, of course, is Rosanna Arquette's brother. Rosanna from the Toto video, just in case you remember that old episode.
Sure. Or, if you want, Courtney Cox's husband from our Friends soundtrack episode. Yeah.
And Born in the USA episode.
That's true, yeah.
But it starts off with David Arquette, who's playing the character Dewey Riley from the movie Scream. And basically, all the members of the band are killed by Ghostface throughout the course of the video.
Yeah.
It's so 90s. It's cheesy.
Doesn't he come, like, he comes and grabs Scott Stapp while he's, like, out on a date and pulls him into a tree or something like
that? It's so ridiculous.
Oh, it's ghastly.
And then at the end, of course, it's revealed that the band is all playing a prank on their girlfriends, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
So the video is kind of stupid, but the song rocks, and it's so 90s. If you love the 90s, I don't think you can control your smile when you watch this video.
All right,
let's move on to the next one. Next song is called With Arms Wide Open.
Well, I just heard the news today. It seems my life is gonna change. I close my eyes, begin to pray. Then tears of
joy. Sounds amazing.
It's hard to argue against this song, given that it is the biggest hit of one of the best-selling groups of all time. It won a Grammy. It's huge. Even the video. I remember the video for this one. You know, even though I wasn't watching MTV at that time, it was unescapable, this song.
It really was unescapable, although I have a feeling Def Dave managed to escape it. But
it's down in his cave with his Run DMC and his Boys albums.
That's right. I absolutely love this song, so I'm perplexed that you don't like it.
I don't dislike this song.
Okay.
I don't dislike this song, no.
My oldest son, Gunnar, was born right around this time. Mm-hmm. And when he was born, I made some pictures, put it to this song, and, you know, showed it to my family. And so...
Oh, it's perfect.
This is a goosebump type of song for me.
Right. Well, I mean, this is the song that he wrote when he found out that his wife was pregnant with their first child.
Absolutely.
Jagger.
That's right. Her name is Hillary.
Okay.
They were married. They're no longer married.
Okay.
I read online where she was arrested for punching him with a cell phone.
Okay.
Which...
He may have had coming.
He may have had coming. That's true.
Yeah.
Especially after seeing some of his drunken outbursts and stuff.
There's a whole lot of more chinks on the scale as time continues to move on.
Yeah.
So before we get away from this song and this video, yeah, I love the song. It's beautiful. It's obviously from the heart. He's excited about his first child, wanting more for his son's childhood than he had growing up. Take this world, take it by the hand. He wants something better for his son, and that's a beautiful thing.
It is. Yes.
And obviously when things get really popular, everybody wants to then jump on the hate bandwagon.
Right.
But I also got to say, watching this video, if you've come out and said we are not a Christian band, maybe, just I'm just going out on a ledge here, maybe putting yourself in the video on a mountain with your arms stretched out like Jesus on the cross is not the best move to back up that statement.
His arms are wide open.
I don't know why people are confused. We're not a Christian band. I don't know why everybody's saying that. Scott, we're not in Rio de Janeiro here. You know, you've got yourself posed like Jesus in the video on the mountain, yep, with the helicopter rotating around you. Yeah.
I know that was an irritant. I know it was an irritant for Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit. I know it's an irritant for Jeff Johnson. He told me that.
Offspring, the lead singer, would wear a shirt that said F Creed or Creed sucks or something like that. I mean, everyone else in the rock and roll community wanted to hate on this band because we're not Christian, but let me come out with this video where I am obviously Jesus on the cross.
Well, and Scott's, you know, he's been pretty open about it. I think he's been very open about this, that the guys were confused. What's going on in our lyrics? Oh, by the way, you're snorting cocaine. Like, what's going on? You're not living this Christian life.
So this song was released in April 24th of the year 2000.
Yeah.
You mentioned Fred Durst. So April, May, June, 3 months later, they're in a show together. Limp Bizkit is the opening act. Creed is coming on later. And Fred Durst from the stage says, F Scott Stapp, he's a freaking egomaniac. And the feud begins, right? If you don't want to appear to be a douchebag, don't be a douchebag.
Well, before revealing what we know later on, he was bipolar and he had mental health issues, yeah, that were coming to the surface. So let's hang on to that thought for a second.
I can feel your need to defend Scott, and I understand that.
He acted in a way that was very abrasive to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I do understand that. By the way, the song hit number one on the Hot 100, and I actually recognized two more songs in the top five.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So number three was Kryptonite by Three Doors Down.
Love it.
Fantastic song.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another Christian band. Number two, Madonna, Music. music, make nope. the beat.
Okay. I lost me on that one.
And then number one, With Arms Wide Open. Okay, that brings us to album number three. First song off of album number three is a song called My Sacrifice.
This is the song that made me go buy this album.
This is probably my favorite Creed song.
I love it.
I love it too. It's melodic. It's rock. It even is beautiful.
Yep, and it speaks to a belief that we both share. So this song came out, the single was released before the album came out. It was released in October of 2001. The album comes out later that November, maybe 2 weeks later or so. And everybody is scarfing up this album because of this song.
Yeah, it's like people our age, it was kind of like mandatory. Like when you went to the airport, they made sure you got your copy of Creed. Everybody owned this album.
Yeah.
This song deals with Scott's struggles with drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Which he battled for many years past this. But, I mean, once again, this passes the goosebump test. They talked about how in order for songs to make the album, they would test it. And if it gave the band goosebumps, mm-hmm. that meant it was good enough for the album.
Yeah.
There's a breakdown in the middle of the song. Let me play it for you real quick.
When you are with me, I'm free, I'm careless, I believe, above all the others will fly, this brings tears to my eyes.
Heard it 1,000 times, gave me goosebumps right there.
Yeah, it's unquestionably a fantastic song. It again, I mean, legitimately flies in the face of this idea that they're not a Christian-based band, but I don't care because the song is so incredible. And again, it speaks to the struggles that Scott is going through. Like, when you're with me, I'm free. When you're not, I'm not.
Right.
I mean, it's a very important concept to his heart and mind and spirit.
It's a spiritual song.
Yeah.
This reached number four on the Hot 100. I recognize two of the songs in the Hot 100 top five. 2002, which right. is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Number five is In the End by Linkin Park. Great song, right?
Yeah.
Number four is My Sacrifice. Number three is Always on Time by Ja Rule.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Number two is How You Remind Me by Nickelback.
Of course. Of course.
And number one is You Got It Bad by Usher.
Well, okay. I mean, I know of that song, so yeah, that's a decent top five.
Yep.
Yeah.
This song is so old that they actually played it on some of the Human Clay tour dates.
Yeah. Well, as amazing as this song is, this is the time period where we see Scott really starting to slide down that slippery slope that allows everybody to jump on the Let Me Hate Creed bandwagon.
They're immensely successful.
Yeah.
They portray themselves as Christian, but Scott's got a massive drug and alcohol problem.
Right. And then what happens is he is in a car wreck as he's going to record with the band. He is in a car wreck right around the same time, right around 2002. It seems minor at the time, and he doesn't realize that he's hurt, which is not, I mean, genuinely, I have plenty of experience with this. It's not unusual that you don't feel hurt when you have a car wreck and then later on develop pain from the injuries that you didn't know you had. But the law enforcement comes to do the report. They note that there are no injuries and that's like $1,000 worth of damage or whatever. But then later on, he develops these neck pain, back pain, and they cancel the next 20 dates that they have on their tour over this, which of course everybody latches onto and like, oh, no injury in the car wreck, but they're going to now cancel 20 dates. And then as you've mentioned, before the car wreck, he's doing his own drugs and alcohol. When he starts doing the pain meds, he flat out says, I did not drink alcohol because I thought that that was going to be a bad combination. But that just meant that I was going to do a lot more of the pain meds. And so he becomes addicted to the pain meds instead of to the drugs and alcohol that he was doing before, which becomes even more difficult for him to overcome.
Before we get into all the fallout from that, the song for the video that he was on his way to when he got in that car accident is the next song we're going to talk about.
Well, let's see it.
That song is called One Last Breath.
Please come now. I think I'm falling. Holding on to what I think is safe. It seems I found the road to nowhere. And I'm trying to escape. I am back when I heard thunder. But I'm down to one last breath. And will it let me say? Let me say.
I defy you to say that that is not a great song as well.
This, in any day of the week, is in the running for number one Creed song for me. This song routinely will make me tear up.
I can see your eyes are watery right now.
The emotional struggle that he is describing is something that so many people go through, and it's just, it's hard. And the life is hard, and this is talking about, is it worth it?
Right. 6 feet, it's not really that far down. I mean, he battled with suicide, depression, anxiety, heartbreak, drug addiction. This guy's been through it.
Yeah.
This is the third single off of Weathered, released April of 2002. This hits number 6 on the Hot 100. I don't know any of the songs in the top 5. Okay.
Right.
The band got together. They wrote this in his living room, Scott Stapp's living room, and also on his Sea Ray cruiser. So I guess it wasn't all bad all the time, but it was written at a time when the band was falling apart. And like we said, on the way to shoot the video, if you watch the video, he was in a car wreck where he hits his head on the windshield. He breaks a couple of discs in his back that ultimately gives him medical trouble for a long time and causes more pain addiction problems. And ultimately was a terrible day.
Yeah.
And a terrible decade after this.
Yeah.
An amazingly beautiful song.
Yeah. So I got to say this. In the Shirley text group that we have, one of the things that I like to do when I run into epic cover versions of songs is I will send it on to you guys, right?
Right.
I love hearing the epic covers of various songs. I talked about it. I said the Kiss song from The Fall Guy.
I Was Made for Loving You.
I Was Made for Loving You. I love it. You know, it gave me a little more love, Kiss, which I don't really love at all, so that wasn't too hard.
Right.
But Tommy Prophet and Nicole Serrano came out in 2002 with an EP called The Creed Collection. And they have a cover version of With Arms Wide Open, of Higher, of One Last Breath, and of My Sacrifice. But One Last Breath is the first one that I heard. And I was like, oh my gosh, could they have made the song better? It's so beautiful to hear a woman singing this song with an orchestral background.
In his grace, I cried out, heaven save me, but I'm down to one last breath, and with it let me say.
Tell me you couldn't imagine that one playing at the opening of a James Bond movie.
Oh, definitely. It sounds like the Billie Eilish song, No Time to Die.
So. Exactly. By the way, guys, if you haven't listened to it, go back and check out our Bond theme draft that we did with some of the coolest podcasters in the world. That Jason did with the coolest podcasters in the
world.
I was absent that day, and I got to just enjoy it on the headset like everybody else.
It was Jason and a bunch of cool podcasters. Oh, that's beautiful. I love it. I mean, it's such a great song. Such a beautiful song. And again, deep, meaningful lyrics.
Yep.
All right, let's go on to the last song released from Weathered and the last song we get from Creed until 2009. That song's called Weathered.
I
So this song was released November of 2002, nearly a year after the album was released. Reached number 7 on the mainstream rock charts. Again, lots of religious imagery in this song, and it's the last single we have for nearly a decade.
Yeah, this is a different sound for them. They've got the drop D tuning, and they've got a very bluesy sound on this one, which I dig a lot. This was not one of my favorites, but to go back, I'm like, oh, I forgot about this one, but this is a good memory once I listen to it over again.
Once Creed breaks up in 2004, the rest of the guys from Creed, minus Scott Stapp, create another band called Alter Bridge.
Yeah. So 2002 up to 2004, as we've said, Scott is abusing these pain meds that he's on, and it's causing a lot of trouble with the band's ability to perform well. As a matter of fact, in 2002, it really comes to a head in Chicago. They put on a show, and Scott, according to the fans, is so out of his mind on these drugs that he was just laying on the floor, rolling around, just the most dismal show you could expect this band to perform. And the band even like comes out with a public statement a little while after the show that we're like, hey, we realize this was a little different show than you might expect to hear from us. But, you know, congratulations. Maybe it'll be a historical event. Well, yes, it was, because the fans then formed a class action and sued the band and Ticketmaster and the venue for giving them a crappy show. Like, we paid a lot of money for these tickets, and this is what we had to watch. Which, when I heard that, I was like, what the heck? And then I heard the judge's ruling when he dismissed the case, which was, you're not guaranteed a good show when you buy a ticket. Which,
yeah,
that was what I thought. I'm like, yeah, that's right. That's reasonable.
You get what we give you.
You buy a ticket. It's just like any other ticket. I mean, the movie, you might have bought a ticket to Showgirls. You might have bought a ticket to Jaws 3D. You might have bought a ticket to The Last Action Hero. But guess what? You don't get your freaking money back. Okay?
That's it. That's right.
Yeah. You don't have a guarantee of a good show. But again, this is, we see the downward spiral. And like you said, to 2004, the band, quote unquote, breaks up. But
goes on a hiatus.
The only member of the band to not be in the next band is Scott Stapp.
And that says something.
So they have Altered Bridge. He starts doing some solo projects he sounds exactly like Creed sounded before, which you would expect. He ends up on this show on Spike. The channel Spike, you remember that channel?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it was a casino cinema or something like that.
Okay.
And he trashes his bandmates. He trashes Dave Grohl's penis, I believe, to be specific.
Little Dave.
He makes some kind of inappropriate comments and actions to Howard Stern's wife.
I watched this. It was horrifying.
Yeah?
He's trying to kiss her. And he is so clearly out of it. Like, it's humiliating. Well, he's acting like, what? I mean, he's acting like a 13-year-old teenager.
Needs to be smacked.
Yeah.
Go read the Bible.
Howard Stern needs to punch his lights out. Go copy Proverbs.
Then 2005, he's at a Baltimore hotel, sees the drummer for 311, Chad Sexton, and sucker punches him. What?
Right.
Did he think it was Limp Bizkit? What happened here? I don't understand that. 2006, he gets remarried and he gets arrested while trying to board the plane to his honeymoon because he's creating a huge scene. And then also in 2006, the infamous Kid Rock tape comes to light.
Yeah.
Then I guess he must have really kind of gotten his stuff together. He realized that, like, what he was doing, because keep in mind, his son is now almost hitting teenage years at this point. And yeah, so he knows what's going on with all of this craziness. And so he's like, I feel bad about what I'm doing my son. His wife had filed for divorce. And 2 years later, it must have been effective because he gets back together with Creed and they release Full Circle.
They do. You would think that he's gotten his crap together.
Well, temporarily. As we said, he seems to be a roller coaster of stuff.
Well, can I pile on for a second?
Go ahead.
So, thankfully, in 2014, he gets diagnosed by a doctor at a rehab clinic of having bipolar disorder. You ready for this? I got details for you on this.
Yeah, tell me.
So, he makes all these really weird videos and posts them to the internet. Things like, the IRS has frozen my account and I'm penniless and I'm living in a Holiday Inn and I'm homeless and there's angels living on the hood of my car. He also calls the White House because he believes that President Barack Obama has been kidnapped and that he was hired by the CIA to either rescue him or kill him. We're not sure which. And these are all crazy thoughts in his head.
He puts together a crowdfunding campaign because he's homeless and broke, where he wants to build his new album and write a book. And so he asked for $480,000. If you guys will send me $480,000, I will put together a kick-ass album and a fantastic book for you. I promise. Okay. Yeah. He said he thinks the CIA is conducting mind control experiments on him. He believes his family is the center of ISIS.
ISIS. Yeah.
He sends his wife texts where he says he could talk to God and that God was warning him about the DEA for some reason, and also that Alcoholics Anonymous is a CIA operation and that they have biological weapons being deployed in Florida. She promptly files for divorce.
Yeah.
Reasonably so.
Yes.
But ultimately, they don't go through with the divorce and they reconcile.
He meets a doctor who diagnoses him with bipolar disorder. They get him hooked up on the right medication. Yeah. I saw him on Dr. Oz with his wife and this doctor basically saying, look, I got everything under control.
So by 2017, he was of sound enough mind that the guys from the band Art of Anarchy, who had just lost their lead singer, Scott Weiland, from his drug overdose,
yeah,
they want Scott Stapp to come and be their lead singer in his place. And so he hooks up with them. And then they sue him because he refuses to help promote the album, refuses to shoot promo videos, refuses to tour with the band, which is, I mean, that doesn't sound good. But they had also sued Scott Weiland for the same things. But here's the rest of the story on that. So Scott's band, his solo project band, rents some buses for their tour. And one of the buses that they rent is the bus that Scott Weiland overdosed in.
Oh, my gosh.
Scott Stapp, to this day, believes that he had a conversation with Scott Weiland's ghost inside of that bus.
And what did he say?
He didn't see him. He just heard his voice. But basically, it was just a, you could do this. You could make it. You're going to be all right. Don't do what I did. Okay, last story. Last story. Is the last douchebag Scott story that I'm going to tell. Okay, I promise. So he, even though he's married, starts communicating with the girl online.
Aw.
Yeah, and she convinces him to come meet her at a Denny's so that they can have sex. He drives 2 hours to get laid. He goes into the Denny's.
And you're kind of discounting the Moons Over Miami dish.
Well, there is that. He walks into the Denny's only to have the entire restaurant turn and look at him and go, Creed sucks!
Oh, gosh.
No sex, no Moons Over Miami. He goes home empty-stomached. And
sad and lonely. All right, so let's get down to it.
Okay.
Is Creed worth the hate?
The short answer to the question is no. Simple no. Scott Stapp has obviously had a lot of crappy things.
Yeah.
He's made a lot of very bad decisions. He's disappointed a lot of people. And I know that what you're going to say is, well, yeah, but look at every other rock and roll artist that's out there. They all have these debauchery lives. You know, the Eagles would torch their hotel rooms. Motley Crue would die from drug overdoses and kill drummers of great bands in their drunk driving escapades. Yes, but none of those guys were referring to Jesus and the cross and God on a routine basis in their songs. And so the dichotomy there is what allows people to jump on the let's hate on Scott Stapp bandwagon, which I don't want to jump on that bandwagon. I haven't made as many bad decisions as he's made, or as big in public anyway, but I certainly have made a lot. I'm far from perfect. I hope I'm not as big of a douche as he comes off to be. I can understand why, especially Amanda Janik will immediately jump on the Scott Stapp, don't make me listen to anything that he says or sings. I can understand how he can be a very disappointing guy. But when we go back and we just listen to, we didn't even listen to all of their charting songs. We listened to the best of the best, and they are all amazing songs. There was not a disappointing song in the bunch. And I go back to what I said before. There was this movement by Rolling Stone and other media in the entertainment world to kill rock and roll. They wanted rock and roll dead. And because of their position, they likely killed it. And because of that, I hate them far more.
Right.
And I would give anything to have a band like Creed putting out new music right now that was so appealing, that was so good. I would love to have that instead of what we get from, I was about to say T.I. Do you know this?
No.
So Scott Stapp either jumped or fell off of a hotel balcony and was saved by the rapper T.I., who had no idea who he was. He just happened to be the guy that was on the ground whenever Scott hit.
Fell 40 feet.
Yeah. Like he would have been dead except for the rapper T.I. So T.I., thank you for saving Scott Stapp. But back to my point, I would so much rather have a rock and roll band like Creed putting out music today than what we have now. So not worth the hate, but I understand.
Your answer makes me want to stand up and cheer.
Good.
Because pretty much agree with you. Their music is phenomenal. And most of that is due, in fact, to Scott's amazing ability as a frontman and a lyricist. You combine that with Mark Tremonti's incredible guitar work, and you've got this combustible mixture of killer, meaningful rock. And I love the songs. They give me goosebumps. They make me want to cry. They give me all the emotions. Scott's made a lot of mistakes. He's disappointed a lot of people, including his fans and family. So I get why people are kind of down on him. However, as a person of faith, I believe in redemption. And I think you can turn your life around. His story's not done. And I'm excited to see is going to happen, including maybe November 2nd when we go see them in Oklahoma City.
I'd love to do that.
So no on Nickelback, no on Creed. Neither one are worth the hate. But I want to ask you, final judgment. You're walking out the door. Which catalog are you grabbing on the way out the door?
It depends on where I'm going.
Okay.
If I'm going to have a long drive ahead of me and I'm feeling in a contemplative mood and I need a little cry, I'm picking Creed.
Okay.
If I'm going to the gym and I need a song to kick my ass, I'm picking Nickelback.
Really?
Yeah. And full catalog, if I had to pick, if I can't say, it depends. Full catalog, I got to tip the hat to Nickelback. They overcame. Because like I said, I didn't own Nickelback albums. I did own the Creed albums, but upon the review, Nickelback wins the day for me overall.
Okay.
I'm anxious to hear your review because you were a big Creed fan and you had virtually no experience at all with Nickelback.
I was familiar with their hits, but not their deep catalog. I tend to like songs that make me feel good. I like party rock. I like party rock more than sad rock. I think Creed's peaks are higher. Forgive the pun. I mean, I really do think they're higher. I think Nickelback's catalog is deeper. And I'm shocking even myself, but if I'm walking out the door and I can only grab one catalog for a road trip, I'm rolling down the windows, turning up and thumping Nickelback the whole way. But I still love Creed. I can't help it. Yeah. I love them both.
So, unanimous decision. They're not worth the hate. More understandable for the hate on Creed.
Yeah.
I still can't figure out on Nickelback what, I don't get that hate at all. But we're both picking Nickelback for the deep cut as well.
We want to hear from you guys.
Yeah.
What catalog are you grabbing on your way out the door? Is it Nickelback? Is it Creed? Is it neither? Is it both? Tell us what you think. D, what do we got coming next week, man?
We're doing a very unique thing because obviously we're at the 30th anniversary of the movie Pulp Fiction, but we're not covering Pulp Fiction. We discussed it, but we decided not to.
Right.
We are instead covering two of Tarantino's scripts that were directed by other people. One of them being True Romance, which was directed by our hero, Tony Scott, and the other directed by Oliver Stone called Natural Born Killers. We have discussed Oliver Stone before. This will be an interesting one to get into. But these two movies are connected, even by Tarantino standards, more than any two movies I've ever heard. And you will get the full story on that when you come back for that episode. We will not be done with Tarantino before the year is up after those two episodes as well.
We'll see you back here next week.
Thanks, guys. Oh, O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.